welcome to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, just across the street from DPNL. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss with you any of your firearms-related needs, whether it's purchasing a firearm, receiving training in any capacity, whether it's you're totally unfamiliar with firearms and you want to get into the firearm world, or you want to get your concealed holder's license, or you want to receive some advanced training to make yourself more competent and capable, either for realistic self-defense purposes or for competitive shooting, whatever the case might be. We have the ability, and that's what we specialize in, and that's training people in how to safely handle and competently use firearms. And I certainly want to give you the opportunity to come down and talk with our staff, whether it's in our structured formal classes or in individual lessons. We'd be more than glad to help you satisfy any of your firearms-related training needs, whatever they might be. If you'd like to get on the show today, please give us a call here at the studio at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you in the queue and give you a chance to voice your opinions, comments, whatever they may be, on the air. As a lead up to this particular show, I'd been looking through different bits and pieces of news articles that had flashed across my computer and in a newspaper, and Mark just mentioned right before the show something that I read about last week, that the White House is passing or has passed a couple of executive orders. However, the actual content of those two orders is not clear. Matter of fact,
it's not even yet been published on their website, so they probably haven't been signed. But they are, the press release is on their website, and I think that this is at least their explanation of what they think or what they say or what they want us to believe the executive orders will do. So we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that the one thing that I did see that stood out in, and I don't know that it's going to be very consequential, but I know they're trying to kind of give, I don't know how to really describe it. They're trying to make it seem like they're doing something that's substantive, because they haven't been able to do anything realistically, because most of the proposals that have been brought forward over the last 2 years haven't been very practical. No, they're not going to make it past the Congress, and then in this passing an executive order that has bad content would also be the wrong thing to do. But the one thing that was, I think, worthy of comment and discussion, that they wanted to do made it difficult for people with mental health issues to get firearms. Well, many, many, many times. And
that is, if there's one common thread among all these active shooter situations, that is certainly one of them.
Absolutely.
The active shooter has always had some sort of mental problem, and people knew about it.
And the concern for our listeners, I know, is how far are they going to go? And I know in the press release that I read the other day, one of the comments that they went out of their way to mention is that this is not going to apply to individuals who are seeking treatment for certain emotional situations. And just think about it, and just in everyday life, whether it's a death in the family, and I apologize in advance if I strike a nerve, but I just want to mention there's lots of things that cause us to experience emotional mental turmoil, short term, medium term, sometimes long term, and all of us deal with those kinds of things differently. But I know there are some people, when you say anything about releasing records that will help government officials, particularly people that are involved in the background check process, getting information about a person's mental competency to possess firearms, they get a little bit concerned, and rightfully so, given the climate of the way certain things have gone over the last several years. I don't doubt their concern. I don't want to in any way minimize that. But at the same time, I just think it's best for us to look at what they say, and the main thing is to follow it, because a lot of times they'll throw a blurb at you like this. They'll give a brief explanation of what their intention is, and then they backdoor you. They think you forget about the content and what was going on, and then the real bill is some hyped up version of what they led you to believe it was going to be, and it goes against what you thought was going to happen.
And I think that's something that we need to be paying attention to. Everybody
Absolutely.
Should be paying attention to. Keep a close eye on what's going on. If you don't know where the executive orders are published, it's not very difficult to search and find it. If you just type White House executive order. It'll come up in a search on almost any search engine. And there is a page that has listed all of the executive orders that have been issued by the White House under each administration. So it's pretty easy to go find that information. And I did that just before I came to the studio. And these two are not there yet. So that's why I say they're probably not yet even signed.
I think it's safe to say that for most of our listeners out there, anybody in the gun world, we don't want people who are emotionally disturbed and mentally deranged and have evil thoughts in their head about inflicting mass violence to have firearms. I think that's a safe assumption on the part of most people, except that when we look, as Mark mentioned, you look back at the mental profiles that they have developed over many of the mass shooting individuals. The individuals have completed acts of extreme mass murder over the last several years. There were some noticeable signs, and many of the people they talk to, whether it's medical personnel, neighbors, friends, family members, whatever the case was, they mentioned those things. And the system has holes in it, and they're working, I think, in many fronts to try to eliminate some of those holes. And I don't know that it's not going to be short term. It's not something that anybody, whether it's the White House, state legislatures, local medical boards, it's going to take a concerted, holistic approach over a period of time, and that period of time is going to be fairly lengthy.
Well,
it's got to be ongoing and ever changing.
The worst thing that they could do is to try to do a quick fix,
I think
that's precisely the problem with some of the other things that have happened recently, is the quick fix. We're going to solve it all at once.
Yeah.
And on the plus side, I didn't see the word period anywhere in this press release. So that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, that's an issue.
That's an issue. Let's go out to the phones. We have several people who've called in already. So we'll go out and talk to John, who's calling from Dayton. John, welcome to the show.
Hi. My question is, I'm hearing that living here in Dayton, they were going to be the first ones to say that we were going to be the stand your ground, whatever. They were going to try to do away with that. But the real thing is, now I'm hearing that we have to have our guns locked up. I don't have no children in my home. And so if somebody burglarizes my home while I'm in it or something, and I shoot them and they say, well, you didn't have your guns locked up. Is that what that's all about?
Well, there's several different things there, and there's some bills that are proposed that haven't got any chance of passing, and that would be included in one of them.
Well, the thing about Stand Your Ground, obviously, there has been a coalition of individuals, and they come from various backgrounds, many of them, quite frankly, based on their past, not very well-versed in the realities and the facts relative to firearms, but they've voiced a strong opinion in opposition of laws that allow people to have guns and use guns in defense of themselves or others. And they've come out and they've actually supposedly testified over at the legislature, legislature in front of several committees relative to what they say is denying stand your ground legislation in the Dayton area. You're exactly right about that. But there, number one, the phraseology of stand your ground is inappropriately applied the majority of the times that it's applied. And in this particular case, it doesn't apply. And secondly, when they go over there and they talk about the issues that they see relevant, they don't have a very valid argument, and it just falls. You know, the people listen to them, I'm sure, but because their arguments don't really have much, it relies almost purely on emotion, and emotion that's kind of dying right now, not literally, but figuratively, and there's not a whole lot of factual basis behind their stance. The second
part. What about the fact that I'm supposed to keep my guns locked up in my home?
That's the second issue there, and there's legislation been proposed at the state level where they want people who are gun owners to be required to lock their guns up. Well, again, number one, that's ridiculous in and of its just the pure concept. Secondly, there's no way to enforce that. And here's what people fail to recognize. There are laws on the books right now, and they've been on the books for many years, that if you have a firearm, you possess a firearm, and someone gets the firearm who shouldn't get it, and they commit a crime, whether it's they seriously injure or kill somebody, you as the individual gun owner can be charged with reckless assault or reckless homicide because of the fact that you allowed somebody to acquire a firearm where they later did something wrong. So there's already laws on the books that deal with a lot of those related issues. And to say that they want to have a law, which they do, and there's language, and Mark can probably even cite the number.
Yeah, it's House Bill 31.
Okay, House Bill 31. They have a law that says that every person who owns a firearm will at all times, when it's not in their possession or on their immediate person, have the firearm locked up. It's no way to enforce it, and it's not really practical. Now, I will say that individual responsible gun owners like yourself, and I'm going to put you in that category. I don't know a whole lot about you, but because of the tone of your comments and the amount of thought you've put into it, you're a responsible gun owner. And you resent the fact that somebody's going to impose a restriction on you that doesn't apply to your life. You don't have kids in the home. You don't have people who are, you know, going to be in your home and have illegitimate access to the firearm. I guess there's always the possibility that somebody could break into your home.
Right. And if somebody steals it and therefore they get your gun because they committed a crime,
yeah,
that's no longer your negligence.
That's right.
So that's a completely different situation. And unfortunately, Representative Patman, who has been on this, this is not the first time he's introduced this bill. It was introduced in the last legislature with a different number, of course. They always get it, you know, every time they have a new General Assembly, there's a new number. But basically the same bill was introduced last time. It got no traction whatsoever. It's going to get none this time either because it's completely ridiculous.
I could get killed trying to get my gun unlocked, you know, if somebody's coming in my home, before I even get it unlocked.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of many, many reasons why that bill is simply going to go nowhere.
And see, that is another, what you just said is so typical of the anti-gun community. And I really believe this is their mentality. You put them in a room and you ask them, would you rather us continue business as usual and deal with each individual situation as it comes up, or pass a law like this and have an innocent person be killed trying to defend themselves? I think their argument or their statement would be, well, we know those things are going to happen, but we're willing to accept the death of innocent people over the death of all these other people because people
if
are getting
guns. If it saves one child,
yes.
That's that, you know, always that, but it's for the children argument.
Yeah.
It really doesn't carry any validity because, although they use kids getting guns as their one of their big arguments for it, the fact is that is not the reason that most children are injured, even in their own homes or wherever they are. That is such a small percentage of injuries, and that's documented by the Centers for Disease Control, who actually are the folks who track that data, and it's a very, very small number.
And the good thing about that is they have no agenda. Their job is to report data, period. They're not on either side of the fence. They've got the facts. We look at the facts, and then we can, you know, analyze the facts accordingly.
John, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our first break for the hour, but if you'd like to be part of the show, you can call the studio at 457-1290, and we'll try to get you up on the board as well. We do have a lot of people who wanted to get in, so we'll get back to the phones right after this break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And let's go right back out to the phones and we'll talk to David calling from Greene County. David, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Jeff, I have a kind of a unique question concerning concealed carry. I found myself having to drive to the emergency room to a local hospital, and I left my concealed carry pistol locked in a box inside my car. And my brother was going to have to take and drive my car home, and I'm concerned about what could happen to my brother if he got stopped by a law enforcement officer for probably maybe a burned-out taillight or something. He doesn't recall that I have a pistol in the car and says there's no gun in the car. What would happen in that situation?
Very good question. I'm going to give you the legal answer, and I'm going to give you the practical answer. The legal answer is the law really doesn't differentiate by letter of the law the circumstances surrounding the situation. So let me apply that. Your gun's in the car. He drives your car. He gets stopped. The gun's found loaded in his car. He doesn't have a CHL. Technically, by letter of the law, he's guilty of the crime of unlawful possession of a loaded firearm in a vehicle. Now, the practical application, and this is where I, being a law enforcement officer 30 years, this is where our discretion, our decision-making ability, which gives us the authority to make reasonable decision based on our interpretation of facts. And in that particular case, I would hope for all benefit of all good humankind that any officer in that situation would realize the fact that you were taken to an emergency room, had to be admitted, he had to drive your car home, and he explained that there would be a exception made, and maybe the officer, I would hope, would say, let me go and help you out, and I'll unload that for you, and safely unload it, pointing in the safe direction, taking somewhere, put it back in the box, and tell you to take it and secure it someplace at your home until you're released from the hospital. So, you know,
the
again,
fact that it's in a locked box and inaccessible to anyone, does that have any bearing on the situation?
Well, technically, no. If it's not accessible to him, and so he can't get into the box, he doesn't have a key to the box, that it would mean it would be difficult without a search warrant for somebody to even be able to know it was there. And if he didn't realize it was there and didn't mention it, the one thing that's going to happen is that if he gets stopped and they run the driver's license or they run the plate, the car will be registered to someone, you, who has a license to carry a concealed handgun, and that will show up. So the officer would be very reasonable then to say, come back and say, now, I understand that there's a license here. It would be helpful for him to say, if he were to get stopped, to say, officer, this is not my vehicle. I had to take my brother to the hospital. It's his vehicle. And if there's a gun in the car, I don't know about it, but I don't have a license to carry a concealed handgun, and there's no gun in my reach, or something to that effect, all of which would be true.
In reality, though, I think that if the facts happened as you described it, and it was just he was just stopped randomly, there'd be no expectation for him to say anything because he legitimately didn't have knowledge. Now, if he has knowledge, you tell him, if you're conscious enough at the emergency room or at the hospital, to say, hey, make sure when you get home you take my gun and do what you got to do with it, then obviously he's going to make a decision to do the right thing there. But again, the rational, reasonable decision would be for the officer to use discretion there and not invoke the formal criminal.
Now, the other thing is that if the gun is not loaded, and that means there's no ammunition in the gun, and there's no ammunition in a magazine or speed loader that can be used with that gun inside the same closure with the gun, then it wouldn't matter in his case because the gun would be unloaded. He could say there's an unloaded gun in the car and it's not a problem. So, I mean, if you're going to be in that situation, it would be best for you to unload the gun, make sure that the chamber is empty, lock the gun away, and then the magazine is not inside that same compartment and you're okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I want to just mention also, we've had a similar situation occur early on until we did some training with our medics. Medics would respond to scenes of accidents. An individual would be emotionally upset and or incapacitated, and the medic starts to work on him, and they undo his coat or shirt, and they find a firearm. Well, there was a little bit early on in some jurisdictions, there was a little bit of panic because some of those people that work in the medic profession in the fire profession weren't skilled at handling firearms and they didn't feel comfortable doing so. So they typically would call us and we would come and we would take care of the firearm. Now what happens in most cases in the jurisdiction where I'm associated, they simply secure the weapon in a safe manner. And then when we get on the scene, we assist them in making sure it gets taken back to the rightful owner. So there's issues that come up when these kinds of things, but again, rational, reasonable decision-making, we hope, prevails.
And along that same line with emergency response, medical response, if you are one of those people that's involved in an accident and EMS has to come deal with you and you have a license to carry a concealed handgun and you have your handgun with you, you don't have a legal duty to inform EMS that you have a gun. But, you know, it's a really good idea to say, hey, by the way, I've got a gun on my person. By the time the police get there, who you do have a duty to inform, you might not be conscious any longer. But if you've told them, at least they know. And then when the police do get there, they can deal with it and it's not going to be a surprise. The best thing is to just not have there be a surprise involved, because when that sort of thing, in that type of a situation, that's just the worst of all possible things coming together at the same time, and we like to avoid that as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's just something that I like to tell people all the time. Way back when the law started, there were people concerned about how officers across the state were going to handle it. Well, the answer to that is they've done a darn good job applying discretion, and even in cases where people act irresponsibly, and I was personally involved in a situation where like that, I used discretion, and it actually came out to the benefit of the concealed holder licensee, even though he had wrongful intent.
All right, we need to take a break for here to go over to Daryl Bauer in the News Center at the bottom of the hour. So if you'd like to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290, and we'll get you up on the board. We've got several people waiting in line now, and we'll get to them after the break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. And if you'd like to get on the show today, please give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll get you in the queue. We have several callers on the line. Mark, let's go right out to the phones.
Let's go back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Darren, who's calling in. Darren, welcome to the show. Oops, I'm sorry. I hit the wrong button. We'll try that again. There you go. Darren, are you with us? I'm not hearing Darren. So let me just put him back on hold, and we'll see if we can figure out what the problem is with that and go out to Scott calling from Wilmington. There's Scott. Make sure that you have your phone, because we can't wait for you if you don't have your phone picked up.
Okay.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Hey, when you start off the show talking about the executive orders that has to deal with potentially being about limiting firearms access to people with mental problems, and you pointed out, hey, a lot of gun owners are worried because where are they going to draw the line? And I think that the firearms community as a whole needs to stop letting the anti-gunners define the terms of the argument.
Excellent point.
If I don't trust someone with a firearm, I don't trust them with a chainsaw or a gallon of gasoline or a car. So maybe instead of, you know, taking the approach, which is just going to be another hook to go in and continue to attack our rights, maybe we should counter with something like, hey, perhaps the solution is if somebody meets whatever your threshold is for mental illness, at that point they're incarcerated.
That they should be committed
in custody by the state. Exactly.
Because they're dangerous to themselves or others, and it doesn't matter what tool they use.
Yeah, well,
They can use a machete, chainsaw. I mean, we could go on all day on this. But we need to stop conceding, well, hey, there may be a valid point to this. I don't want a crazy with a firearm. Let's take a step back and say, well, I don't want that crazy to have access to my kids at the mall. So maybe a better solution is leave the Second Amendment alone, and when that guy meets whatever threshold, at that point he's committed.
Scott, I wish there was an award for an opinion of the day, because I would personally award it to you. You got some very insightful thought about this particular issue. And I want to mention to our audience, and some may know it and some may know it, but there was a movement in this state in particular, and I'll restrict it to Ohio because it's most applicable, in the mid to late 80s on into the early 90s, where they basically deinstitutionalized the mental health facilities throughout the state. Now, they used the argument that funding and then independent living were the two issues. They didn't have the adequate funding, and they wanted to try to acclimate these people to independent living environments. Well, you know, it's been a 20-plus year experiment, and we're seeing some of the fallout. Not only in the area of firearms and mass shootings, but in many areas of other areas of our communities are seeing the fallout of those decisions. Now, we can probably spend months on this debate, and I know there's people out there who are probably thinking that I'm an insensitive schmuck that, you know, has an opinion that isn't worth airing over the radio. Well, first of all, this is my show, and secondly, it's my opinion, and it's directly in line with factual information that I've seen that has resulted in situations for the last 20-plus years. And in my particular job, right here in the Dayton community, I have seen it happen, and we're dealing with people in the outlying communities that my professional opinion in the job that I work and in the things that I do says that many of those people need to be institutionalized, and we don't have places to put them. We deal with them on a day-to-day basis, and it's a challenge for local law enforcement and local human resource management communities to deal with these
county hospitals.
Exactly.
And so forth, yeah.
And they have limitations. Even the hospitals, they recognize the fact, look, we've done what we can for these people. We can't have them taking up bed space because we're not a warehouse. So it's an ongoing problem. And Scott, you hit the nail on the head, and I applaud you for your thought. And, you know, you've got a lot of insight in this particular topic, and it's right on point.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to Phil, who's calling from Preble County. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I'm calling. I was just made aware this week of a law against secret compartments in automobiles in Ohio. It was all over the internet. Somebody was arrested. And I just made one for my handgun for in situations when I'm not allowed to carry it into a building where I'm at. So my handgun would not be discovered if somebody broke into my car or stole my car.
Sure. Well, Phil, again, those laws, and I'm aware of some of the language that has been crafted in some of them. They were designed almost explicitly for the drug transportation trade, the illegal drug transportation trade, where individuals were taking parts of their car, for example, the center console on an SUV, and hollowing out certain areas of it, and makes it look like you pull the ashtray out the front and the cup holder out the back, and you think that's all it is, but then there's a secret way to gain other access. So that's what the motivation was behind the law. Now, again, as we mentioned with the first caller today on the show, rational, reasonable decision making would say that the bottom line is you have, in your particular case, you have a compartment in your vehicle that you use for a lawfully possessed firearm for two purposes. Number one, it provides you with a tactical advantage. And secondly, it provides you with a security advantage, because when a thief would happen to break into your car and he pulls out the cup holder and he pulls out the ashtray, he's thinking, that's the extent of that console. There's no way I'm not going to look any further because there's nothing else. Whereas you know there is, but they don't. So again, you got to look at the intent of the law, and I hope to goodness, even though I'm about ready to bow out, I've got about 109 days before I retire from the profession I dearly love, but I would hope that the officers that follow in my footsteps would apply discretionary decision-making in those cases where you have a compartment that you've used for your tactical advantage and practical advantage, and not apply a law that was designed for a totally different set of circumstances.
I'm not able to pull it up right now, but I know this was discussed in the last session, and one of the things that happened where there were some modifications to that bill, specifically as a result of discussions with the Buckeye Firearms Association and their legislative branch. So although I realize that there is this bill, and it could certainly be misapplied if somebody had evil intent to get somebody in trouble when they really shouldn't be. There were some protections put into the bill when that was put in place, specifically to prevent that from happening and to make that less likely, that there had to be some other evidence of criminal activity. The mere possession of the compartment itself is not sufficient. So though you may have heard some other things on the internet, that's not necessarily the best source for what really is the truth.
Well, that's what I was hoping to hear.
Yep. And some of the modifications were designed specifically where they can make evidence that the purpose of the container or the compartment was to seclude contraband, illegally possessed items, whether it is an illegally possessed firearm or illegal drugs, whatever the case might be, or diamonds, whatever the case might be. If that's part of the pattern of the investigation, then that's just another crime or an enhancement to the crime that they'd be able to utilize. But just having the compartment for the purpose, that was not the intent of the law. And I believe there's safeguards in the law, and that's something we're going to look up, and I will make it a point over the next couple of weeks to report back on that, because I believe the safeguards were designed to mitigate against circumstances like you described.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Terry quickly, who's calling from Dayton. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
How can we help you?
Well, got a question for you. Coming back from the range, have a rifle in the trunk that's magazine fit. In the glove box or in the passenger compartment of the car, I have my shooting bag, and a couple of the magazines are loaded. Is this a problem if I have a carry concealed permit?
No, it's not. If you have a license to carry a concealed handgun, as long as the magazine is not in the weapon, then it's considered unloaded. And there's no rounds, obviously, so there needs to be no round in the chamber. But, if you have a license to carry a concealed handgun, there's an exception in the law that basically eliminates all of those descriptions of unloaded to be anything except there's no ammunition in the gun. For those people who do not have a license, then they do need to be in some sort of separate closure, but it doesn't even need to be in a different compartment of the vehicle. It just needs to be in a separate compartment of the bag. So if you have a Velcro closure that holds your magazines in place, and then you've got a zippered compartment for the gun, then even if you don't have a license, that would be still considered unloaded.
Okay, that's what I was curious about, because I've had people tell me that if I have a loaded magazine for a rifle in the car, period, it's considered a loaded weapon.
And that is the way that it used to be before the last law change went into effect.
Within the last year.
Yeah, it's just at the end of last year. So that is a difference in the law, but that is not the way the law is now. We need to take a break and go out to the news center for breaking news.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and we've had busy phones today, so let's go back out there, and we'll talk to Darren, who tried to call in earlier, and we couldn't hear you, but welcome to the show.
Hi there, Mark. Taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm sure you've heard about the illegal alien who's just been approved to become a lawyer. By the very definition, he is an illegal alien, illegal, hence he's a criminal, and still is continuing to be a criminal. So is this guy going to be able to carry a gun? And if you take it to the next logical step, I mean, you know.
Well let's don't take it to the next logical step just right now. For one thing, the guy's in California, so it's going to be difficult for us to – I mean, it's tough enough in California to get a license to carry a concealed handgun, and it's very dependent on where you live. If this person is actually part of the legal system, that may or may not affect the way the county sheriff looks at it. But, again, that's – in Ohio – if you're an illegal alien, if you are not here legally, you can't get a license to carry a concealed handgun. You're not allowed to have a handgun. If you are here legally, if you have a license, if you have a permit, I mean, if you have a visa or some other reason that brings you here legally, you don't have to be a citizen. All you have to be is here legally, and you can not only purchase a firearm, but you can actually get a license to carry a concealed handgun while you're here.
Well, not only that, if you are a lawful citizen in the state of Ohio and you don't have a license, but you have a circumstance that says you probably need to have a firearm for personal safety and self-protection, the local sheriffs are authorized to issue you a temporary concealed holder's license pending going through the process.
Right.
And they're not going to leave you hanging out there to die, literally.
Yeah.
They're going to give you an opportunity. So, again, it's difficult to talk about circumstances in California because there are so many variables. You know, number one, you're dealing with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and some of the decisions that have been handed down over the years are just – you read them and you're like, how could they ever come to that conclusion? But, you know, you're dealing with very liberal judges with different agendas, and it has a significantly different effect on the way the legal system operates there as opposed to here. So let's just wait and see how it plays out and wait till we get an Ohio case where a similar question might play.
Thanks. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Nate, who's calling from Troy. Nate, welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. All the information that you guys have been talking about with weapons in the vehicle and whether they're, you know, loaded or not loaded got me thinking about my scenario and muzzle loading hunting. And so the question I have for you is at what point will that rifle be considered loaded? Is it powder with ball and the igniter on, or is it okay to, you know, have powder and ball and the gun to travel to your hunting site beforehand?
Yeah, the definition of unloaded for a muzzle loading for any sort of an antique type weapon is specifically identified in the law. As long as the powder pan is not charged or that you don't have a cap on it. So as long as there's no cap. Even if you have ball and powder in the barrel, that's not what constitutes a loaded. It has to be ready to fire. So if you have a little bit more modern ignition system that uses a shotgun primer, if there's no shotgun primer in there, then the gun's not considered loaded. If it actually uses like 4F powder in a pan with a frizzin,
sure.
Then you're gonna, as long as there's no powder in the flash pan, or if you don't have a cap on it, a percussion cap, then the gun is not considered loaded.
Okay, excellent. Because when I was educated on the weapon, you wanted to, you know, prevent your powder from getting moist, so you would preload beforehand and keep it in the case.
Sure.
And then once you're ready to fire, go ahead and, you know, put your cap on there. So thanks. I just wanted to make sure I was, you know, following the law there.
Appreciate
it.
Nate, I'm glad you brought up the comment because what this does is just kind of strikes home the fact that Mark and I have preached for so long. These kinds of things only affect the law-abiding people.
Exactly.
Just think about it. There aren't any, in my knowledge, there's no criminals out there that are going to use muzzle loaders to commit their acts, so that's not an issue. And most of the criminals don't care about magazine capacity because they don't have the right to have or possess firearms or anything related to firearms to begin with, but they ignore all the laws that are currently on the book. And for some reason, there's legislatures in their infinite wisdom that think that, well, if we limit capacity, like they've done in New York, to 7 rounds, we're going to reduce crime. And criminals are going to abide by the rules, and when they commit their acts, we're going to be able to respond quicker because they're only going to use 7-round mags. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not the case, and that hasn't been the case for the history of criminals, and I can't believe that they're going to pay any attention to these ridiculous laws as we move forward. But I'm glad you brought it up because it really strikes all the callers. I can't remember the last time we had a criminal call in and ask what the magazine capacity was on the round the rounds he has in his
I'd
car.
I'd have to go back almost 5 years, but I think the answer is zero.
But it's exactly. It's the law-abiding citizens.
From our standpoint, it's also, you know, those of us that are law-abiding citizens, we're the ones, you know, worrying about it. Well, I want to make sure I'm safe. I want to make sure I'm, you know, if I get pulled over, I've got everything, you know.
Absolutely.
I want to have all my boxes checked,
yes.
Whereas, you know, criminals really don't care one way or the other. They'll just go ahead and disobey the law as they see fit.
That's kind of like the definition of criminal, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So, Nate,
yeah.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Let's go out and talk to Joe, who's calling from Lima. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. If I have a stripped AR lower, and what are the steps I need to do if I wanted to build a short-barreled rifle or a pistol off of that that lower, say, 9mm or whatever caliber I choose?
It's already a receiver, and it was purchased as a receiver, I assume you mean?
As a receiver only.
Okay.
And it has a serial number on it, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So SBR, it's going to follow the same criteria as if you had bought a lower receiver that was already converted, and or you bought an upper to go on top of it. The issue is going to be that if you have a barrel that's shorter than 16 inches in length, you're going to have to apply for the permit, which I believe is it $500 or $200? I get the two mixed up.
I think it's $200.
I think it's $200 for the SBR. You'll have to apply and get that permit before you have the functional parts to make that rifle into an SBR. Now, as far as making your own AR, if you've purchased the lower and it's a strip lower and it already has a serial number, you can acquire all the other parts and you can acquire an upper and you're good to go, because it's the lower that gets processed when you do a 4473 and do a NICS check, a background check.
For those people who aren't familiar with the AR structure, the gun comes apart into two pieces, an upper and lower part. And the lower part, the receiver, is the part that has a serial number. And the upper part has most of the rest of the action, including the barrel and so forth. So the sighting systems, all of that is in the upper part. And a short-barreled rifle or an SBR would only affect the upper portion of that. The upper is the only part that has the barrel on it. So the lower, it's how that serial number is tracked. And I just, you know, fill that in for those who aren't as familiar with AR as you obviously are, Joe.
So it doesn't matter whether there's ever been a buttstock attached or not. It all has to do with barrel length and then overall length of the finished weapon.
Yes, that's true. Now, one thing I want to caution you about, there are some people out there who are taking the pistol versions of, for example, the Sig Sauer has a AR variant rifle that looks like it's actually classified as a pistol, and Rock River has a pistol, and they come with I'm going to describe it as just a tubular
buffer tube
that comes out the back end. And there are some people who are making modifications and putting stocks, actual collapsible stocks, on those. Well, that automatically converts that pistol to an SBR. Now, on the other hand, Sig Sauer has produced and manufactured, and they're mass distributing, a forearm grasping device that allows you to wrap this device around that buffer tube and secure it onto your forearm so that you can maintain some stability when you hold it out in a point-ready shoulder position and fire the gun. So there's a couple of differences.
And that's not a stock.
That's right. It's not a stock. It's not classified as a stock. I know there's some people probably out there that are looking at that, but the bottom line was its sole purpose is to make it easier to fire those bigger pistols in a more efficient manner. So be careful in that regard. But the way you're doing it doesn't really have any bearing, as long as you don't have together at the same time in your possession the barrel that is less than 16 inches and the lower. You don't have to worry about the SBR. If you have the SBR parts, then, or if you're thinking about doing that, go ahead and get the, I don't know if they call it a license or a tax stamp.
Yeah, it's a tax stamp.
Yeah, it's a tax stamp. It's just a way for the
government
to.
And you have to get approval from the police
money.
Department. It's got to be the form.
There's
has
a
to
form.
Be
there's
in.
An application process. Has to go through the local police department. It's time consuming, but not difficult.
So I would have to do that with my local county sheriff since I live in a rural area.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. And that, so if you were to build it as a pistol only, with only the buffer tube, do you have to register that? Or
no.
No. And
no.
Just be very careful that you don't put a forward grip on it, because that also causes a problem. Some people would say, well, I'm just, you know, I've got the regular grip that comes right behind the magazine, and I'm going to put a forward grip on so I can make it more stable. If that means it's designed to be operated with two hands, it's not a handgun anymore. So you just have to be careful that you understand all of those rules and follow them closely, because they could get you in a lot of trouble otherwise.
Okay.
Joe, thanks very much for calling the show. We're just about out of time, so time flies when we're having fun, and we want to thank everybody for being part of the show today. We'll be back next week. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.